Hey, I'm Tracy Burns. Welcome to the Wine With Me podcast. This week, actually, we're going to take a different angle. We're still drinking. There's still going to be wine. But we're going to talk about how to get into this business, in particular, as a woman, what it's like to be here. I have Master Sommelier Laura Manick with me here today. Now, your list of accolades, I'm not even drinking, I can't speak. It's like a mile long. All right, first of all, Wall Street Journal called you the it girl. Crain's New York Business honored you as one of their 40 under 40. Food and Wine Magazine named you one of the 2013 Psalms of the Year. Wine Enthusiasts included you on your top 40. I mean, does it make you laugh out loud? And by the way, you look like you're 16.
I'm not. So, it's good that I look like it, but I'm definitely not 16.
But you have been in this business pretty much since you were 16.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And you've knocked it out of the park.
Thank you.
So let's backtrack a little, because I was reading that, you know, you spent Sundays at your grandmother's in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, like you, I'm Sicilian. We used to get a little juice glass of wine. So yep. I've been drinking since I was 12,
mm-hmm.
8, young, 7, maybe even younger. Is that how it all started?
I would say the wine drinking definitely started at a younger age, mm-hmm. probably about 14, 15, just like tastes. But really, hospitality and entertaining started at that same table. It was these big Sunday suppers that inspired me to want to take care of people and entertain. And how I first found wine was, you know, sort of by accident, because I knew always I wanted to own a restaurant. And at first, I thought I was going to be a chef. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I had drawings and names, and I was going to call it, you know, Rosie's after my grandma.
So cute.
So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely in the right place, in the right career, and super happy about it.
So let's talk about your designation, Master Sommelier. So
yes.
Different from Master of Wine.
Correct, yeah.
So what's the difference?
Major difference, like quick pointers, is a Master Sommelier is someone that works in restaurants, generally at least starts their career wanting to do the service aspect of wine and master that, in addition to all of the theory and the tastings. And Master of Wine, that's, you know, equally as high of an accreditation, but more someone that's desire is to work in the trade, maybe retail, and or maybe they want to write about books, or maybe they want to write a book, rather, about wine.
If anyone saw the Psalm movie,
yeah.
And I'm sure you did too.
Of course.
Is it is that true? Is it real?
Oh, yeah. It's
legit?
Absolutely legit.
Because it's hard. It's like, I mean, to me, I felt like these guys were studying for their medical exams.
Yeah, no, it's like getting a doctorate, and the subject is wine. Well, it's
right.
a lot of fun, but it's certainly really overwhelming and super intense. And you dedicate those years of your life just almost entirely to studying in this idea of achieving this master designation. And actually, I think in Eater today, they announced that they're doing a second TV show and filming of Psalm.
Really?
So
like a
so
new
there's
group.
More. Yeah, there's
now,
a new group.
Let's backtrack a little bit. So you, now you're young. If you don't mind, you know, I'm going to ask you how old you were.
Yeah.
So you started even before you could legally drink, right?
Yeah, technically, yes.
Sort of. You were like 20 years old, and you go take Kevin Zarelli's infamous wine class, Windows on the World. This is all before 9/11.
Correct.
So you're in it during it. 9/11 happens.
September 10th, but Monday night,
yes.
The night before, yes. So 6 to 9, Monday nights, we go to World Trade Center, 103rd floor, take this amazing, motivating, super encouraging wine class with obviously great, you know, guest teachers, and we're learning about the world of wine. And yeah, the next day the world changes and there's no more World Trade Center. And I mean, it's a lot deeper for most people than, you know, losing a place to have a wine class, clearly, to be respectful of them. But yeah, you know, it just shook up the world, of course, and changed my direction from I want to go to culinary school at CIA in Hyde Park to I just really want to be close to friends and family. Let me stay here. And by the way, I love wine, and I never knew you could make a career out of it. So
you never finished the class?
No. The class, it started back again probably a month later, and it was held at Beacon, I think the restaurant that was associated with it at the time. And we finished. So, yeah, the certification finished.
But then from there, you went on really to be, I mean, you were running the wine. You were the wine director in a lot of amazing restaurants.
Yes, I worked for Steve Hansen for 10 years at Be Our Guest. So that was really the reason that I know as much as I do. And he's still a mentor today. So He's a good guy.
So you go to all these restaurants. Now, you're still under 30 during all this, right?
Yep.
And so you say, I'm done with the restaurant world. I want to open my own joint.
Well, I really love the restaurant business. I want to open my own joint.
Okay, fair enough.
But, but maybe I'm done in this phase of my career. I'm done learning and working for someone else. I kind of want to do it all myself.
But you do it all and you do it differently. So Cork Buzz becomes your baby. November 2011?
Yeah,
is that right?
Okay. Good job.
So November 2011, which, you know, this is huge. Again, you're still not even 30.
Mm-hmm.
So you're... Cork Buzz, though, it's not just a wine bar.
No, it's not. Definitely not just a wine bar. I think of it now, it's evolved a lot. I mean, we opened 3.5 years ago, or, you know, the project itself between and finding the property was like 4 years ago. But it's changed. You know, it was always supposed to be a wine education, like, center, a hub. And it's always supposed to serve wine and have great wine and food. And now it's become... For me, it's become like this place to nurture sommeliers, people that are really love wine, and both my employees and, you know, our industry. But the food is unbelievable. So now it's a wine-focused, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's a restaurant. You know, special events happen there, amazing classes, team building. So, yeah, that's the deal.
The first Cork Buzz, though, was in where?
It's in Union Square.
In
it's
Union
still
Square,
there.
Right? And that was the first one, and they open and you have these classes. I mean, if people go online, if you're ever in New York City, you go online, and the beauty of it is these classes are one-offs.
Yep.
So you don't have to commit. You and I were just talking about this. This is one of my resolutions for the year: is to learn more, get involved more, take some serious classes, but I can't commit. And the way you did it, I think, appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah, I do a lot of yoga, and I do a lot of bar classes and other things that I find work with my schedule. There's multiple classes in a month, and I might choose the teacher or the location depending on what's going on in my schedule. So I wanted a wine studio that was similar to that. So you drop in because you found you got out of work early on a Monday night and this class appeals to you. Or maybe you like my teaching style, so you come to every Friday evening class that I teach. So yeah, that was a new way of looking at wine classes, because historically they were like when I took classes, you know, every week, X amount of time, and at the end you maybe got a diploma or maybe you got an accreditation or a certification.
Right. You're also a very different face of a wine teacher too. Like, I'm going to generalize, and it's not true for everyone, but they're often older men.
Yes.
I find they talk with a slight accent, even though half of them don't even really have one. Like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, right.
I've been in some seminars and tastings with some of the bigger names in the wine world, and they talk a little different, and I'm pretty sure they're not from the places they... Whatever. So you're young.
Yes.
You are, again, under 40.
Yes.
You're under 35.
I'm 35.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How is that?
You know, I think it used to be... A lot of people want there to be an issue with being a woman versus being a man, and actually I haven't had any struggles with, like, being a woman and people taking us seriously. I mean, often, because I do look younger, and especially when I was younger, I looked even younger.
And you were younger in a restaurant.
Correct.
Yeah.
So people did say, like, are you sure you're old enough to drink? And, you know, maybe that you had to prove yourself with a lot of passion and knowledge because you didn't look the part of that typical sommelier, maybe French trained, maybe not. And so that was more of the challenge of being young and being really, you know, considered as an expert at a young age. So if I passed my master's when I was 29, which I did, it was like, oh, really? How could you achieve that at
right.
such a young age? And so now, you know, I've built a pretty strong reputation, and I hold my name and my business is like really high in high regard. So I think now, people take me seriously. But even still, like, I'll work the restaurant floor and they're like, "Wait, you own this place?"
Right.
Like, they, I guess,
you look,
they just
young,
assume I'm a host.
But you look really young. So and Cork Buzz has a young connotation.
It does
to it.
Yes, it's fun,
and that's what it should be.
It should be. It
and
definitely
that,
should.
That's
be.
Why I think like the wine world should be like thrilled that people like you are coming through, because
thank you.
It is. you know, just taking away this whole notion that it is this, you know, the only thing you should be drinking are first growths. And mm-hmm. God only knows what half that means, right? Because right. some old dude back way back when decided he was going to call these five vineyards his first growth. And yep. that was it. I mean, it was that random. And then here you are and introducing the world to different wines, too.
Yes.
And I think that's like a real big part of it, right? There's wine all over the world.
There is. You know, everywhere you can think of, even the regions you don't think, countries that you don't know of, they make wine. And I think it's exciting, you know. I mean, for us as Americans right now, the world of wine is really it's an exciting time to be in the business or to not be in the business. I mean, just because so many people are making wine and there's so many stories you can share and people and personalities. So I'm really jazzed up. I'm pumped about the wine world right now.
How do you keep doing it, though, in a place like Manhattan? I mean, so you open the next place in Chelsea
Market.
And now you're working on another one
yes.
outside of the area.
Yeah, in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Because?
So my uncle is my business partner, and our family has a house in Charlotte, North Carolina. And actually, a lot of our clients, like our bigger corporate clients, they are based there. So it was a natural fit. We had roots there. We loved you know, the area and the people and everything about the South, and it's a little slower and nicer and kinder. And so for our first out of New York City place, we wanted it to be somewhere we loved.
But I think that says a lot, too, because I think people presume that, you know, there's only wine drinkers like in, you know, the major cities.
Right.
And out in the country, they, you know, who knows what the hell they do. I don't even know what they drink. Bourbon.
Yeah.
But that's not true.
No, not at all. And I think these underthought markets are really the place you want to be. You want to be the first, you know, really exciting wine bar, wine destination in a market that maybe doesn't have, you know, 15, 25, 30 other wine, you know, educational
right.
places. So we'll really be able to take the excitement that people have for wine and make a good business out of it.
So let's talk now, because you are like the queen of education here. What do you tell people? You know, do you get people off the street that have no knowledge?
Of course, yeah.
And how do you start them?
I think you have to start slow and, you know, kind of give them bits of information that's digestible in small bites. You know, you can't just tell them everything all at once. So sometimes I withhold information a little bit.
On purpose.
In a healthy way. I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to tell them about the generalizations and then all the exceptions. I just tell them the generalizations about wine, and then, like, after I feel that there's, like, oh, that aha moment, then I might say, okay, but then
you
consider this part.
So I'm sure everyone asks, and I did too, what are your go-to wines?
Mm-hmm.
What do you bring when you're going to someone's house? So tell us what you brought.
So today I brought these two completely different wines, and it's really exciting right now for winter for me to drink, you know, maybe fuller-bodied wines than I normally would have as far as red wines or white wines. And so, you know, in the spring and summer, we always have rosé. And and I think amongst, you know, sommeliers, but also, like, the consumers at the moment, there's, like, this hot new-ish wine style, which is called orange wine. And it's not
Ooh.
Made from oranges. But rather, we call it orange wine.
So that's this.
Yeah,
clearly, it's orange.
This orange color.
And is it, what kind of grape is it?
So this particular one is made from the grape called Malvasia, which is like so
aromatic. Oh my God, it smells fabulous.
Yeah, right? It smells like a really beautiful perfume, but not like in a sort of soapy way.
Where is this grape from?
This one is from Italy, but they grow it all over the world and mostly in like Spain or Portugal or Italy. Sometimes the islands have a lot of Malvasia. The Brits call it Malmsey.
Really?
Yeah. It's a white grape, but in this particular wine. Yeah, right? It sounds funny.
All right, so I'm going to taste this. Oh, that's really nice. It's definitely like a heavier version. Is that what you were trying to get at?
Yeah, so it's a white wine that's fermented on the skins, which is not normal. You know, normally you separate the juice and the skins from white wine. So this one, they get a little bit more deep color, but more importantly, like slightly more tannin. You never really use the word tannin for white wine. But in this one, you might say that. It has like that tea, like almost astringency in a good way. So if you...
Tea. I get tea.
Yeah, like the tea tannin.
Yeah.
Like maybe if you have a nice floral or, you know, herbal tea, you would get these same aromas. But it smells like it's going to be sweet, right?
Yeah,
and
totally.
It's
and it's not.
Totally dry. So it's just aromatically enticing, but it's not at all.
But the color
sugary.
Is amazing.
Yeah,
the color almost looks like it would be like one of the brown liquors.
Yeah, I could see that for sure, like Armagnac or something.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And you know, I think what's great about it is it's like halfway between a white and a red, but in the opposite way that spring would be rosé. So for example, maybe in the early parts of spring, you don't really want to drink like a full-bodied red yet, but maybe. Or still, rather, because it's spring, and you're not really ready for light summer whites, so you choose somewhere in the middle, and then this is the opposite. It's like maybe you don't want a light white wine because it's cold out,
like
but you're not ready
Blanc.
For red. Yeah,
this is fabulous, and this is an Italian wine.
Yep.
Accessible.
Yeah, and it's relatively affordable. I think it's probably $20 retail. It's female winemaker.
Love that.
Yeah, the property is called Lucenti. And it's from Emilia Romagna, where, you know, all the great foods of Italy come from.
It's fabulous. And you could probably do this with a pasta dish.
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, pastas with like cream sauce, with mushrooms, with a roasted chicken.
Really nice. And then the next wine I noticed you brought is the screw top.
Yeah, it is. It is.
This is like a big, pretty serious trend, isn't it, screw top?
I think so. I think it's the wine world's answer to making sure that wine is not being served corked. I mean, the cork that closes the wine sometimes can taint the wine. And so with the screw top, you don't have that.
But does it preserve it and does it age it the same way?
You know,
jury's out.
I never did a study on how long a screw top will age a wine. I think most people that choose to use it, it's because they desire to have the wines drunk now.
And yeah.
So who knows? I mean, I don't see the first Carozza of Bordeaux doing it anytime soon, although there is some experimentation at Margaux with it.
Really?
Yeah. They did
hey,
some
well, that's
trials.
Encouraging.
Yeah.
Okay, so what'd you bring us here?
So another favorite of mine, it's another female winemaker. Actually, I randomly looked in my cellar and grabbed these, but then I was like, oh, that's great. I took two women winemakers.
That's fabulous.
So this is, it's called Donkey and Goat. It's actually a couple in right around Berkeley, California. And they make this wine, Grenache is the grape. So the same grape as Châteauneuf-du-Pape.
Yep.
It's one of my favorite grapes. It's their El Dorado County. So California, Grenache. It's like sun-kissed Pinot Noir. It's like the same texture as Pinot Noir, but more ripe. So I really love it.
Now, these are wines that you would open at night at home. Mm-hmm. These are wines you'd bring to friends.
Oh, for sure.
So because you could clearly, I mean, I like that sun-kissed Pinot Noir because we've talked about Pinot Noir here, and Pinot pretty much goes with anything.
Yes, it does. The texture and the lack of tannins makes it appropriate for fish, and it's easy drinking. It's a really versatile grape. So the thing about Pinot Noir is often it's on the sour side of fruit, so cranberries, raspberries. Sometimes, of course, it has a more ripe flavor, but Pinot Noir wants to grow in cold climates, so it wants to have that sour tone or acidic nature. But Grenache, it loves warm climate. So it's kind of that grape that you get the texture, you get the body of Pinot Noir, but maybe it's a little more generous, or the perfect thing is to say sun-kissed, I guess.
Or a little sweeter than
stewed. Too. Yeah, exactly.
But it is just as smooth as the Pinot.
Absolutely.
Not nearly as many tannins as the first.
Correct. Yeah, the white's more tannic than the red in this
instance.
Right,
which is a rarity, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And again, reasonably priced?
Yeah, I would say probably retail less than 30, and that was the goal, is to bring some wines that you can have buy a case and have them at home for when a friend stops by, but that, you know, they're still like not $10
wines. Yeah, this is a great little wine.
Yeah.
You know, the thing I think that a lot of people have issues with too is what do you do? Is part of the screw top notion, you know, that you can leave it on the counter and come back to it tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think in general people worry too much that a wine's going to spoil like overnight. That doesn't happen. I mean, certainly you can preserve it a little bit more if you put those little stoppers in the van.
Yeah.
Or if you put it in the fridge, keep the life a little bit more because the temperature will preserve it. But, you know, these days a lot of people are using that. You probably have heard of it, Coravin.
Of course.
We've talked about it here. We've been using it a lot at the restaurant. It's really helpful to open world-class, amazing wines and serve them by the glass that we might not have been able to do if it was not for that technology.
It's pretty cool. We've actually had the founder here, too.
Oh, fun.
So before I let you go, like, what are the trends then? I mean, this orange wine clearly is a new trend. Mm-hmm. What are some trends you're seeing in your place?
I would say, you know, the trends are more, education is definitely trending.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
I just love it.
But there's a ton of people. I mean, and I'll tell you what, there's a need for online, too. So if you,
oh, yeah, that's a great point. Lots of rich media, maybe some, you know, kind of like podcasts or do-it-yourself wine education.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're trying to do here. But I think, like, the, you know, this, even the certification, there's got to be a way to do that online someday. Education is so hot, which is why you're in a sweet spot.
Yeah, that's good.
It's really great.
Yeah, and it's natural, though. I mean, I think the education piece is, like, it's exciting to see Americans, like, filled out. Every single class that we have online, it's like sold out and there's wait lists.
Wow.
So that's really fun, you know?
That's really great.
Instead of just like maybe drinking whatever is in front of you, people are now like curious. So that's been helpful. And actually, I think that helps the new and emerging countries maybe that don't have the, you know, the following. It becomes, they become now wine regions that are go-to regions. So it used to be people said, oh, I don't like Greek wine. It's, you know, only Retsina. And now people are like, no, I get it. They grow grapes all over the islands and the mainland, and I'm likely to try a Certico grape from Greece. So some countries like, I don't know, maybe Croatia or Turkey,
right,
or Greece, like people are willing to try that. That's also the same case for lesser known grapes, like not the Chardonnays and Cabernets and Sauvignon Blancs. I mean, those are still popular, but then people are saying, yeah, I'll try Verdejo.
Grenache
or Aglianico.
Is it, do you think, too, it has a lot to do with the clientele being younger? Again, not to stereotype, but it used to be, you know, your father's crowd drank wine.
Right.
We drank Bartles and James wine coolers. That was the extent of what I got.
Yeah, I drank Zima.
Okay. That's because you're younger than me. I think they actually shut down. I mean, I could be wrong, but they probably just finally said, this stuff is so bad.
Uh-huh.
Bartles and James need to go the way of the dodo bird.
Yeah. Like, we also had Cisco, and I think that was just like bad, bad news.
Zima, though, came in like a pretty bottle,
I remember correctly. It looked like Sprite.
Yeah.
We pretended like it does until you get the hangover the next day.
Yeah, exactly. But so you get these young kids in that'll say, yeah, I'll try wine from Moldova. Who cares?
Exactly. Yeah, they don't have any preconceived notions that it's you know, French, Italy, Spain, and that's it.
Is that going to change then? Like, how are, I mean, are you seeing that people are, for one, I think everyone's buying wine differently, right? The wine shop is unfortunately going to go away.
I think so, actually.
Right?
Yeah, because who wants to schlep cases of wine home? I mean, at least in New York, you know, it's very hard to get, you know, to carry bags. You've been working all day. So, yeah, so I think that, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but it's probably going online. And the, you know, small wine shops are not as relevant as they were, or maybe, you know, it depends on the wine laws of the state, because certainly,
which is a whole nother issue. And it's sad because the old, you know, the people that own those shops are so knowledgeable.
Yeah.
You know, but so that's a trend, I think, right? The online thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, to me, I didn't drink wine when I was 21, and young kids are.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, we have a, you know, we have one of the youngest staffs, I think, of any place in New York.
Do you really?
22-year-old sommeliers, you know, and we have.
That's amazing.
And I think that.
And they know their stuff.
And they know their stuff. And you're like, wait, you just took Jancis Robinson's whole entire encyclopedia and put it on flashcards, and you're, what, 20?
Wow.
Like.
And by the way, you're not even legal to drink.
Yeah. But I'm excited about it because, you know, it's just encouraging for me to see these, like, people that, like, I can see myself in them, and now I get to, like, help them along in their careers.
I think you're pretty awesome. I think you're inspirational, too.
Thank
to
you.
Like, to women, to just the industry, the face. I mean, I love that people are trying to make you the new face of it, because
that's
this
nice.
Is what it should be. This is like, you know, the 25-year-old actually really does know.
And
you know what? They have so much more energy and excitement about it, too, as opposed to the old guy saying, you should have the Lafitte.
Yeah, totally.
Meanwhile, I have to mortgage my house. Laura, all right, quickly, tell us website. Tell us everything we need to know to find you.
Sounds good. I am at Laura Manick at Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. My restaurants are at Cork Buzz Wine and Cork Buzz Chelsea, and it's corkbuzz.com. Super easy. Even my emails, laura@corkbuzz.com.
You're awesome. She's awesome. If you're ever in town, you got to check out her places, or Charlotte now.
Yes.
And who knows elsewhere. Be open. Try new stuff. Go try these wines she brought today. I think that the takeaway here is that, you know, anything goes in the wine world now. Centani.